Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Worcestershire County Cricket Club seam sensation, Dylan Pennington. So Dylan, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been very relaxed. Couple of coffees and feet up, getting ready for, I suppose, to watch another 100 game tonight. But yeah, very relaxed day. Thank you.
Oh, fair nice enough, Dylan.
Thank you very
sounds
much.
Like the life. It really does. Coffee, having a relax. Have you been watching the Olympics at all, mate? I know that Team GB have been doing quite well today.
I've been watching tons of it. It's been really, really good. A lot of the swimming, and then watched a little bit of the athletics, the highlights and stuff, but it looked pretty damp there. So I don't know what was going on really, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that was in the old cricket, don't think we would have got much play. Covers definitely would have been on. At that stadium in Tokyo. But of course, Dylan, we aren't here to talk about the Olympics, although I imagine that both of us could probably do that for hours as well. But yeah, we are here to talk about county cricket. So just for the listeners out there, I'm going to be chatting to Dylan today about his earliest cricketing memories. Of course, we're going to be discussing quite heavily about your time at Worcestershire County Cricket Club. And then, of course, to wrap up today's special episode, we do, of course, have a classic round of TCCP teammates. But Dylan, before we get into all of that good stuff then, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of the Dylan Pennington cricketing journey. So Dylan, what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
I think my dad was he was quite good. He played a lot of cricket, but didn't quite make professional standards. But he had a lot of trials and played some second team cricket and stuff. And he was a pace bowler, so I think he introduced me to it. Spent hours and hours and hours in the garden bowling and hitting balls and whatever. So yeah, he introduced me at probably a very young age.
Fair enough, Dylan. So very much family orientated in terms of the first steps.
Definitely. I think that we're all absolute cricket badgers. So yeah, we love it. I think it runs in a family.
Fair enough, Dylan. That's what we like to hear, of course. Obviously, a lot of passion in the Pennington family for the wonderful game of cricket. And you mentioned there your dad being a real role model in those formative years. But in the world of professional cricket, Dylan, did you have any role models or icons per se that you looked up to and tried to aspire to become?
I think 2005 Ashes was a big one. Of course, I think when I've listened to a lot of Who's Your Idol and stuff over the last few years, and a lot of it is Freddie Flintoff, isn't it? In that 2005 Ashes, he was absolutely unbelievable. And I sort of expired from there, really, as a wanting to be a match winner, wanting to be someone who can change a game from nothing, when nothing's happening. Like being able to change a game is an absolute huge asset that any cricketer could aspire to have, really. So yeah, he was someone I looked up to a lot through the years, and watched him bowl a lot, and I still do, like watch him back. Or he's sort of an idol now, still looking at him, what he's doing and how he's gone about his life. Yeah, definitely.
Great choice. And of course, a very popular choice here in England and Wales. Freddie Flintoff's an absolute legend. And we always think back to the 2014 T20 Blast, of course. My co-host Joe isn't here, but I'm sure he would look back on this final very, very fondly as a Lancashire fan. But when he came back in that final against the Birmingham Bears, and he got Ian Bell out pretty much first ball. I mean, he's an absolute legend of the game, isn't he, Freddie Flintoff? And for you, Dylan, we've mentioned the 2005 Ashes there. What do you say was your standout moment from that legendary series? I mean, we could pick so many, but was there one that really stands out to you from a cricketing perspective, per se?
There's too many to pick, isn't there? Mm-hmm. I think just how he changed the game. I can't remember which test it was when he took those wickets and just changed the game out of nowhere, really, and took the victory. I think, there's too many sort of memories to pick, really, I suppose.
To be fair, Dylan, there were. But in terms of that series, what's your favourite test? I mean, obviously the Edgbaston test. Would you say it is?
Yeah, Edgbaston test. Of course. And there's no better, is there, than a test match at Edgbaston, I don't think. Or anything at Edgbaston, actually, really, as it is. Well, apart from the mighty Worcestershire when it's a packed house in the Champo Games.
Here we go. It started already, hasn't it, Dylan? The West Midlands rivalry, Bears versus Pears. We'll touch upon that, of course, as the podcast does progress today. But what a series. What an absolutely legendary England team as well. That Australia team throughout the 90s just dominated England in the Ashes. It was absolutely ruthless. And then 2005 comes along and it inspires an entire generation of cricketers. What a series. What sure a does, fantastic series. But for you, Dylan, I wanted to ask this, actually, because you mentioned already Freddie Flintoff. And of course, Freddie, an absolutely wonderful seam bowler. But why did you, Percy, go into seam bowling? Why wasn't Dylan Pennington a batsman, a spinner or wicketkeeper? What was it about seam bowling that lured you in the first place?
If you've seen me bat, you'll know why I didn't become a batter. I don't know. I think it probably just runs in the family. I think my grandpa was a bowler, seam bowler, and then my dad, obviously, seam bowler, who I think was very good. He talks, he doesn't talk to himself as a good cricketer. He doesn't say anything, but I think he was a pretty good cricketer, listening to some people talk about stories about him. I think I just wanted to follow him, and it's always exciting, is it, as a young guy, being able to try and bowl the ball as quick as possible. I think at a young age, I wanted to do everything at 100%. So being able to bowl the ball as quick as I could at a batter and take as many wickets, I think, seems pretty fun as a kid. And I just followed that up, really, and took it on all the way up through, yeah.
Fair enough, Dylan. I always liken seam bowling to the romantic aspect of cricket. It's the one which we do fall in love with first, I think, when we look back at some of the fantastic seamers, the Sherb Akhtars, the Brett Lees, for example, Sean Tate, the Wild Thing. I mean, even there, we've just mentioned three names who will always go down in the cricketing history books because of just how rapid and fast they were. But for Dylan, who was your favourite ever seam bowler of all time? Would it still be Freddie Flintoff, or does someone else take that pinnacle for you, per se?
Oh, I don't know. I always look up to... I try and have a comparison with Broad. So I've always looked up to him as an unbelievable bowler, how he goes about his business. From now being in the playing sort of in the same sort of when he plays county cricket and stuff, I think it's been really good to grow up and watch him bowl live a lot. And I think he's one I look up to a lot in terms of seam bowling, because I can compare and I can work out what he's doing that I'm not, that how I can get to that level and stuff like that. So yeah, he's definitely one that I look up to and think, and I just think he's an unbelievable bowler. Had an unbelievable England career, but of course, Jimmy Anderson and stuff like that. But
fair enough, Dylan. I can definitely see the comparisons there with Stuart Broad, both tall, blonde, fast, swing the ball corners as well. Hey, fair enough. Yeah. But you mentioned there about Jimmy and of course Stuart Broad, who will be seeing in action in the Test arena on Wednesday, England versus India. I cannot wait for that first game at Trent Bridge. That is going to be an absolutely blockbuster series.
Yeah.
But of course, Jimmy and Broadie play for Lancashire and Notts respectively in the County Arena. And that brings me nicely, Dylan, onto my next question. And that is, what were your first ever memories of county cricket? We mentioned already about the family aspects and, you know, the formative years of your cricketing journey. But what were your first ever memories of the county circuit, per se?
Well, my first memories was my... I suppose my debut is a pink ball game, the hottest 4 days of my life at Trent Bridge on one of the flattest pitches of my life. And I remember talk about this quite a lot because cricket, it was just mad to have that as my debut, where I think I bowled 9 overs in the first session. Bearing in mind at this point, I hadn't really played too much cricket and I was still pretty young in my body and wasn't used to bowling lots of overs and stuff. But anyway, I bowled these 9 overs and I didn't go for many runs. I think I probably went for less than 18 and I was pretty happy. I then came out after lunch and I was as stiff as a board and I couldn't really move. Very, very fresh to the county cricket grind. And I then went for about 30 in 4 overs and I was well and truly put back in my seat of how good these players are, how good you have to be to compete in at that sort of level. But it was quite a tough debut, but that was my first initial sort of moments as a county cricketer, and how difficult it was going to be from then on in.
Yeah, we get that quite a lot here on the podcast in terms of that step up from second 11 and academy cricket.
Crazy.
Completely different ball game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is massive. It's you go from club cricket then to chucked into second team cricket, and that is a whole different level as well. And I had stories from my debut in that as well, which weren't ideal. But it's nice that you can go up through the steps and change levels and being able to compete at those levels. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. It's progression and evolution, isn't it? I mean, we talked there about Anderson and Broad beforehand. Let's not forget they played club cricket. They went up through the exact same system and now are two of the greatest seamers of all time. So it is wonderful to see. It really, really is. And I suppose for you, Dylan, as well, because you, in terms of the academy side as well, you played a lot of cricket for Shropshire. And I would like to touch upon this if we could, of course, because Shropshire, a national county, not a first-class county, but a very, very important feeder county for Worcestershire. So in terms of your time with Shropshire, how important was that to setting you on the right path in your cricketing journey? How useful was that time with the Western County?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I obviously did all my age group stuff with Shropshire. I started there. I didn't actually get picked for my first age group, I don't think. I think I was in the district or something like that. So I started off there and it was brilliant. I loved it. It was great. I had a very good team as an under 11. So it's some very good seamers, some very good batters. And it was really a competitive environment. And that started me off. I think my closest friends then were unbelievable cricketers. A guy from George Hargrave, who was on the Warwickshire Academy, actually. And Charlie Holm, they were both unbelievable cricketers. So I got to train with them a lot and bowl at them from a young age, and that was really good. And then going up through there, and then I finally got selected for the Shropshire First 11. And that was, again, that step up is huge. I was going from club cricket and I played the first three there with Shropshire as my debut. And again, it was really hard cricket. For the first time in life, it was really tough to get batters out. They didn't make mistakes, and I had to get the wicket rather than someone just throw the bat out and nick one to the keeper. It was the first time I was like, "Wow, it's going to take a lot of hard work." And I think, sort of eye opener to, again, you've got to make that adjustment, and you've got to move up. But it was great for me, Shropshire. Everything about it. I still love going home and seeing some of the lads that I played with and stuff like that.
Well, I was actually going to touch upon that, Dylan, because you are Salopian. For those who don't know, that's someone from Shropshire. Okay,
it's something the best club in the world.
There we go. Exactly. Very, very proud, aren't they, Salopians of
the
county? And fair play, fair play. There's absolutely no reason not to be. But how momentous of an occasion was that for you? Because it is your county, born and raised. You've come up through the system. And I know it isn't first-class cricket, we'll mention that in due course, but to play for Shropshire as a Shropshire native must be massive. How important of an occasion was that for you, Dylan?
Yeah, it was great. I remember it briefly because I hadn't played much, and it was the first time I really had like a real... Because Shropshire games, we played at Shifnal, actually, that three-day. And for the first time, there was like a big crowd, a lot of people getting involved. They've got quite die-hard sort of... local fans that love going to watch the four-dayers, the people that I'm assuming aren't watching 100 right now. But yeah, they absolutely love it. So it was first time I get a crowd and cheer when you get a wicket or bat balls flying to the boundary. And it's really good atmosphere, and it excited me for what's to come. And it was a first taste of me feeling that I got on all right that game. I felt quite confident that, wow, I'm not chucked right out of my depth. I felt in the contest and I felt like I could take wickets. And that, I suppose, that helps a lot going into then when I played academy cricket and stuff like that at that point.
100%.
And obviously moving into second team cricket, which I think that year I made my second team debut as well. So it gave me a little bit of confidence going into that and helping me out. But yeah, it's a great occasion, and especially playing with some of the lads you play with at club cricket. It's really good.
That is what we love to hear. It really is. I mean, we don't get many opportunities to actually talk about the national counties, but it is a very, very good league. I must admit, I do like national county cricket. I've been to Oxfordshire, actually, for a match, so I do like the NCCA.
Yeah.
But in terms of the national counties, Dylan, obviously, let's go Shropshire side. What would you say was your favourite away trip? What was your favourite ground to go to for the national counties?
Sadly, I didn't play too much. I played one for the only away trip I did actually was went to Chester, and it was great fun because we left on the Saturday night with the guys from the club cricket. Like a whole new world to me, really. Road trip down, chilling in the bar and stuff like that. It was a very relaxed environment. Not really too many nerves about the game. I can't remember where the ground was, but it was lovely. It was really nice. So that was my only, and that was a 50-over game.
Was that against Cheshire?
I think so, yeah.
Was it Chester Boughton Hall by any chance?
Can't remember.
Fair enough. That is a lovely ground.
But it was a very, very nice ground. I remember that. And it was quite a good day, yeah.
Fair enough, Dylan. Obviously, some good memories.
You know what? Ooh. I've actually just made a mistake here. My debut, I think, was actually a 50-over game at my home club, Shrewsbury, for Shropshire. And then I played the 3-day, and then I played the 150-over, and then I was done. I didn't play again, sadly.
To be honest, Dylan, in retrospect, would you have wanted to play a little bit more for Shropshire? Obviously, playing for Worcestershire is massive. Of course, it is. They're one of the 18 first-class counties, but playing for your home county, that must be big. Do you wish you could have played a little bit more?
Oh, I would have liked to play a bit, start a bit younger, so I get a bit more of a chance. But I suppose I always talk about this at club cricket. I love going back to play club cricket. I absolutely love it. It's like one of the best occasions in the summer. But I always say to myself, it's actually probably a good thing that I'm not playing, because that means I'm doing okay at county level. So I suppose it's the same sort of thing when I think about it. I was obviously doing well enough to play for Worcestershire at that point, which is a good thing its own way. It would have been nice to play because it was my home county. Like, it'd be lovely to play a lot for Shrewsbury, but I suppose in a way it's a positive if it's going that way. But
100%, yeah, that is the right outlook to have. It's an honour to represent Worcestershire, even though of course I'm a Warwickshire fan. Maybe it wouldn't be an honour for me. But they are a big county. Of course they are. They're one of the 18 first-class counties. And I did just find it funny when you said you love going back to club cricket. I bet you do. 6'4", tall, quick, pace and bounce. I bet they hate you, Dan.
No, I don't think pace and bounce. I think not at the old Salop, but it is great fun going back. I really enjoy it.
Fair enough, Dylan. That's good to hear as well, the fact that you still do go back to grassroots cricket. I like that. Obviously, a massive badger like myself. Obviously, one of us has a lot more talent than the other when it comes to leather on willow, though, has to be said.
Do you ever play?
I do play. I average 11, bat 10. Filthy bowling average. It's not bad, but I don't think I'm going to be representing the Bear and Ragged staff anytime soon. And if I do, then something is desperately wrong at Warwickshire County Cricket Club. That's all I'll say.
But maybe Dylan, a COVID hit or something might get you in, but
I don't think they'll be that desperate. I'm going to be honest. If they are, I will worry for cricket in this county. That is all that I'll say. But Dylan, we aren't here to talk about my dodgy cricket skills. Thank goodness we'd be here for about 5 minutes and the podcast would end. But we are, of course, here mainly to talk about your time at Worcestershire. And you've mentioned already your Red Bull debut, or I suppose in your instance, your Pink Ball debut in 2018. Yeah. But I wanted to really touch upon your List A debut, which of course was a Bears versus Pears derby. So before we get into the game itself, Dylan, what do you make of the West Midlands rivalry? Of course, you were born in Shropshire, but you've come through the Satellite Academy of Worcestershire. You play for the Pears. What does that game mean to you when you see it on the schedule?
Yeah, it's what we always talk about is the best game of the year. It's brilliant. It's especially when you play at Edgbaston, it's a full house there. It's absolutely booming, and it's a great experience. And especially, and then at home as well, it's awesome. You get all the Pears v Bears chants, and it's brilliant. It means so. It's this year was good when we had the three games on the trot. It's like you want to get that rivalry one, and it's good to get one up. yeah, I love playing against Warwickshire. It's a game that I really want to do well, and it's a game that I want to win. So yeah, no, it's brilliant. It means a lot to get the victory against them.
I would obviously say the alternate option of that, but it does mean a lot. It is a big game. For those who don't understand, Warwickshire versus Worcestershire, Bears versus Pears, it's the exact same from a Warwickshire perspective. It is the first game on the schedule, Edgbaston followed by New Road. You want to go to that game. You want to support the boys. And it is a massive occasion. It is the game that sells out. It's the blockbuster event here in the West Midlands. And I've always had good experiences at New Road as well. I must admit, even though there is that rivalry, of course.
Did you go to either this year?
Well, I went to the home. I went to the home one and I finally saw Warwickshire beat Worcestershire in a T20.
Yeah.
Now that Moeen isn't playing, I think that's probably why. Moeen absolutely hammers us.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an absolute monster when it comes to the Bears versus Pears matches.
Oh, no, you said you didn't.
I wasn't this year. 2019 I did, which was quite funny because that got rained off. But I did get to see one of the Worcestershire fans slide across the covers. So every cloud, silver
line. Yeah, of course.
But in terms of that List A debut, Dylan, what do you remember from that game? Because unlike this year, Worcestershire actually won the game.
Yeah, it was, it was a mad game, wasn't it? When we think back to it, it was a pretty crazy game. Leaping forwards in time to the end of the game where Keith Barker, I think it was, he slid over the ball kicked it before or something. It was an absolute crazy game. And it was I remember, again, leaping to the batting bit, but I remember I obviously hadn't met Moeen at this time. It was very quick going into the squad and stuff like that. So I hadn't really met him and stuff. So he was straight into my captain. And I remember just standing there with my pads on, and Mo, I heard him just say to the coach, "Can he bat?" And I was like, "I don't know, mate. I'm pretty nervous at this time." It was an experience, and I don't know if you remember that clearly. I hope you don't. But when we were talking about my batting earlier, but my debut was atrocious. I kept missing the ball. Keith Barker was reverse swinging them, and I just could not lay bat and ball on it. So it was an experience. It was an experience, but it was a great game to be a part of, and a great kickstart to my career, I think. I learned a tremendous amount from it.
100%. What a game. I mean, what a fantastic game of cricket. It was absolutely crazy, wasn't it? And Moeen scored a century in that game, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
It was mad, wasn't it? Because Brooks and Stoney were bowling
rockets.
Thunderbolts. Mm-hmm. And it was an eye-opener to what this professional cricket is like and how good Mo is, really. But obviously watched him on TV a lot, but to be on his side and watch him live was just, it was incredible. And I've been lucky enough to see a lot more of those. But
well, what is Moeen like as a captain, Dylan, actually? I wanted to ask this because when we look at 2020, for example, and Moeen wasn't there, Worcestershire did struggle, to be honest. Like, he is a massive, massive part of Worcestershire's success over the past 2-3 seasons, at least. He is a really, really good captain for the West Midlands side. What is it about Moeen's captaincy, which is, I don't know, really effective? What makes him such a good captain for the Pears?
Well, I think he's been all over the world. He's played in a lot of T20 sides with a lot of amazing captains. So I think he's learned a lot from there. But he's very calm. He's very simple in terms of the way he wants to captain, the way he wants his players to play. He sets very clear plans for, say, me, for example, what my role is, what I'm going to do. And he sticks by that. And he's very, very, very calm at mid-off. So if he's standing there and you've been whopped for 2 sixes, he's still exactly the same Moeen Ali. He'll wish you well. And he's very good to have it in that position. He's just extremely calm. He's been really good.
Well, yeah, he has. I don't think there's many other words that we could use to describe. I would probably go as far as to say wonderful, to be honest, in terms of his captaincy. And I still think back to 2019. He absolutely mullered us at Edgbaston, completely battered us. I was there for that, funny enough, watching that live. And someone said that they saw me with head in hands on the Sky camera. So that just says it all with regards to how good that knock was. But I also think back to the quarterfinals as well, when he got dropped on 5 by Alex Carey. And then he just started teeing off.
That was incredible. That was the best innings I've ever seen, I think.
Really?
Demolishing. Yeah. He just demolished all their bowlers, didn't he? And won the game single-handedly, really.
Mm.
I mean, it was ludicrous to watch how someone can just hit the ball like that. Yeah, it was cracking.
Yeah, good game of cricket, that. I must admit, and again, not to sound too cliche, but catches win matches. They do. Dropped on they five, do. And then he went and scored a century, smashing it all over Hove with absolute disdain. And yeah, unfortunately, it didn't end the same way as 2018. Worcestershire did come off second in that particular finals day. But what a fantastic season again for Worcestershire. I mean, you've been good at white ball cricket in the last 3-4 seasons, haven't you, Dylan?
Yeah, we had a dip last year, but I think we were nearly our best this year. I think, again, there were some really, really good positive moments for us as a side. But we struggled last year in different situations, new roles. We didn't have the same playing 11 as before, and that always causes difficulties because you're trying to learn your new role. And this year we went back to that role clarity, what people need to do at the right at different times, and it worked really well for the majority of the time.
I'm really happy you mentioned that, because that's a word I always mention on the podcast. I mention it until the cows come home. Clarity. It's so, so important. It really is, knowing your role, knowing when and how to execute certain game plans. It's massive. So thank you very much for that, Dylan, just reinforcing a concept that I do hammer home here on the podcast. But we brought up this season, Dylan, and I suppose we have to talk about 2021. Because I would describe it for you personally, mates, as a breakthrough. I think you've been absolutely fantastic across both formats, in both the T20 and the Championship. How would you go about describing your exploits for Worcestershire this season?
First of all, that's extremely kind, and thank you. But I think if I'm critical of myself, I think at the start of the summer when the first few Red Bulls, I don't think I bowled as well as I should have, or I don't think I had the rewards as I should. There was a couple of drop catches, etc., that didn't kick boost the innings and stuff like that. But you can't really dwell on those. You've got to just look at why you probably aren't taking the wickets you could have. And I definitely tried to adjust that by talking to Giddo and Richo. So that helped a lot. So I'm trying to adjust my length. And I think that helped loads in the last few Red Bull games. It challenges the batters so much more difficult. I think length is now my main thing. If you can get that right, it's so difficult for the batters. If you can do it consistently, you play for England, I suppose. So that is going forward what I want to do. And they've got these four four-dayers coming up after, and that'll be what I look to do if selected. That's the main thing I'll be doing. But I think it's been a really good eye-opening season for me, really. I think, I stayed fit, touch wood. I think for the first time I felt really like physically fit, thanks to the guys at Worcester for doing that. But I feel like I'm not going to break down. I feel ready for 4 days. Feel like I can compete throughout the 4 days, which has helped a lot, which I probably didn't do in my first year, second year or third year, really. So it's that growing into my body and being ready for a 4-day now, which I think I've improved loads. And just understanding the game and stuff like that has helped me a lot. And again, it brought success this season, I think.
100%. It has. And you know what? I'm really happy to hear that, Dylan. Because for Worcestershire, of course, in Division 3, but you still want to win those games. You really, really want to win those games. They're still big games, county championship, prize money on the line. And I'm really, really happy that you've said that the body's feeling good and you're ready for Super September. I can't wait for it personally. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. Of course, watching Division 1 should be a fantastic month of cricket to look forward to. But we've mentioned there, Dylan, obviously this season, and you said at the start things weren't quite going your way. But I wanted to go to one game in particular, and that is, of course, the Derbyshire game, when things did go your way. Now, how would you describe that game? Career best figures, you got a 9-for, and your first ever career first-class 5-for. How would you go about describing that incredible individual performance at New Road?
Yeah, well, incredible team performance to get a victory after, I can't remember what happened in the game, but... It was a good game and all, but it was it was a bit of a whirlwind, really. Mm-hmm. Sort of just clicked. Everything that I've been trying to work on, everything I wanted to do, sort of just went really well. I hit a length, like I just said, consistently. I managed to be able to hit the seam enough times to get my rewards, and it just sort of just happened. It was the first time in that game, just so many first timers. I mean, I've never followed on before. Like I said, I couldn't walk after 13 overs before, in that thing. I couldn't walk after my first second team game. I woke up after bowling 9 overs in the first day and I literally couldn't move. So it was just positives from that game. Of we followed on and Joe said, "How are you feeling?" I was like, "I'm good. I'm ready to go again." Yeah. And it was just great to be able to keep going and keep bowling and be able to get rewards for the Worcester team. And that's my main thing. I just want to have success for the team, really, so we win. And I think I owed them a performance like that for all they do, really.
Fair play, Dylan. And of course, music to Worcestershire fans' ears listening to that. Yeah. And what performance it was, 9 for 76. Best figures. Brilliant.
Very, very crazy game.
Oh, yeah. 100% saying that, though, we've seen plenty of that this year, haven't we? Northants versus Yorkshire, for example, coming down to one run.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah.
We have seen some fantastic cricket this season. Yeah, it has been a very, very intriguing and compelling county season in 2021. Yeah. But in terms of another performance, I wanted to mention, Dylan, and this was up at Headingley this time. And this was, of course, 4 for 24 against Yorkshire. Now, on the surface, 4 for 24 in itself is fantastic, right? 6 economy rate, you've taken 4 wickets. But for those who don't understand the background behind this, the first 2 overs, figures of 4 for none, right? Mm. So how did it feel in that game, Dylan? What actually happened? What can you remember from that game?
I think I actually was nearly 5 for none. I think there was a drop catch before I went for a run, actually. So,
correct. Yep.
So I was very close to that, but funny enough, I couldn't, for the first time in a long time, I just couldn't sleep for the few nights after. And I was just dwelling on so much on that last over and how it got crushed so much. And the success of those first few overs just sort of went right out of my head, and I just couldn't actually get off how bad I sort of performed in that last over and how I should have been able to get out my spell and bowl my 4 overs for low runs. It's those points in the game where you're like, well, I've got to try and win it for the team here by staying at a low economy and stuff. So yeah, it was real tough, actually. I couldn't actually think about the success of, wow, I've got England captain out here. I couldn't believe that I was playing on the pitch with him, really. It was all a bit of a whirlwind bowling at him and stuff. But yeah, I just couldn't get out of my head how bad that last over was. And from then, really, yeah, I tried to work on that situation of going for 20 and over, because I quite often do that.
That's very interesting. Why is that, Dylan, if I could just ask?
I got my plans wrong to Jordan Thompson a lot. I probably was a bit naive and complacent. I thought we're doing all right and stuff. And he came out and played an unbelievable innings. So yeah, it's probably getting too complacent that over, not thinking about it probably as in depth as I should have, right? What plan am I going to have, that clarity and what I'm going to do in the over. That was a definite big learning curve, I think, after that. Other than the last game of the season against Leicester, where I got my plan again wrong in the last over, but was able to change it. Yeah, it was a big learning curve, actually, that over, and why it happened.
Well, to be honest, Dylan, you have to look at it like that, though. You can't just dwell on the disappointment. I mean, still only 22 years of age, you've got plenty of years left in county cricket and potentially international cricket beyond that. You've got to look at adversity at this stage as a mm-hmm. learning opportunity. And to be fair, I think slightly being a bit harsh there, actually, because in that Yorkshire game, what an innings that was, by the way, from Jordan Thompson and Harry Cherrington Brooke. Incredible. Yeah. They went from 4 for 15 to 191 for 5. It's absolutely
and it
staggering.
Too many times that people were getting 100 partnerships against us this campaign. But look, we learn from those and we work out how we're going to get those fifth wicket partnership, because it kept crushing us.
That is true. And then, of course, in the Leicestershire game, I do want to say Warwickshire Loney potentially, because he did get us through to the quarterfinals, but Joshy English.
What was he doing letting you guys through?
Obviously, some of the boys must have given him some Marstons after the game. But yeah, what an innings that was. And again, more incredible games in this year's T20 Plus.
It has been really good, I think. I think cricket's been awesome this summer, really.
Has indeed. It really, really has. But Dillian, you mentioned there about, well, I suppose both of them. And I'd say you're quite hard on yourself, actually, after both those performances, going into it, delving into the reasons behind it. Are you someone who really does really critically analyse your bowling? Is that your style in terms of after a game where things have gone wrong, will you take a lot of time going into the ins and outs of it and looking on areas to improve, per se, in your game? Or do you see it slightly different? Do you have a different approach?
Yeah, I am. I'm more after games like that. I wouldn't say I am. I am a lot more in red ball cricket. White ball cricket is so erratic. You can bowl bad and bowl four overs, 2 for 26, or you can bowl good and bowl four overs for 50. It's you've got to have a very level head when you're playing T20 cricket. I definitely have learned that. I think the quicker you learn that and the quicker you can get over a game. Yes, obviously, if you don't bowl that well, you analyze why or what. But if you've bowled okay, you should just be able to park it. And if you've gone for plenty of runs, then just this the game, isn't it? The game, people come to watch hit sixes and fours rather than wickets, I'd say. And that's my theory on T20 cricket. I think we bowl a lot on. It's only really come to mind really recently whenever we train on a pitch that isn't very good and batters can't hit fours and sixes, it's deemed as a bad pitch. Mm-hmm. So it's a batter's game, isn't it? It's they hit fours and sixes, and if we play on a bad pitch, then they don't need to get 150, and we have to defend it.
There we go. We've ticked off another one on cricket cliche bingo. It's a batter's game. To be honest, Dillon, I would agree. I'm a spinner. It is a good point. In T20 cricket, it is so geared to the batsman, is it? Nice flat track. The ball doesn't do much in terms of movement.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. But you mentioned there about having to almost maintain an even keel. And that is massive, in particular in white ball cricket. Because one game, as you said, you could bowl brilliantly and go 11, 12 runs and over. And then in the next game, you could have a couple of absolute pies and you get wickets. It's a very, very funny and an unpredictable game. So, Dillon, for you personally, how do you maintain that even keel on the roller coaster of emotion that is cricket?
I think it's just learning. It's evolving in the game. It's just getting more mature about the game. I think playing more and playing more helps out loads. I've now played enough T20s to realise that you can bowl okay and go for a lot of runs, and you just have to be able to put it behind you and get on with it. And I've actually learned that a lot, really. I think watched a lot of bowlers go for a couple of runs and they just park it, and that they're the people that are the best in the world, I suppose.
100%. Yeah, and it does happen to the very best. It really does. I mean, I think back to Stokes in 2016 with that World Cup final and Carlos Brathwaite. Look at the way in which he's come back in the years that have followed. So, as you said, the best do understand a way to just park it away, not overthink it, and just keep on going and striving to improve, I suppose, their areas of weakness. It's a good attitude, that. I like that mentality, Percy Dillon. I must admit, a growth mindset, as we like to say here on the podcast. And I suppose, Dillon, before we get into our final thoughts with regards to Worcestershire and heading into next season and beyond, and of course teammates, which I'm very much looking forward to today, what are your aspirations for the rest of this season? Because we've already mentioned it, Worcestershire, Division 3, unfortunately, not in the T20 Blast. It really did come down to the barest of margins, not again to sound too cliche. And of course, you're playing for the Birmingham Phoenix in the 100. What are your aspirations and ambitions, I suppose, for the rest of 2021?
I think I really want to get a couple of games in the 100. I'm desperate to do that. It's a great experience playing in front of a big crowd and playing with the team I'm playing, it'd be an unbelievable experience. So that's my first thing in the next couple of weeks, to try and get a game in that. And then my favourite game is red ball cricket. I love 4-day cricket. I think it's great a great game to try and work out how you're going to get people out. The thought that goes into it, the skill, I think, it's a really high skill game, and it's just enjoyable. I think I love the county grind of having to run in all day. We laugh about it and we moan about it and we moan about our body hurting and stuff like that, but it is great. So I want to get back in the 4-day side. I didn't play the last one because just of bowling workloads and stuff like that, but I was frustrated I didn't play in that. I really wanted to play. So yeah, get back in the 4-day side, hopefully take a few more wickets. That'd be my main thing, and help the lads to hopefully win that little comp that we're in.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, it's as I said beforehand, still big games. It's first class cricket. No matter what division you're in, you're playing for pride. And of course, this year you're playing for prize money. So yeah, still some big games for Worcestershire. And actually, Dylan, before I do mention future aspirations, you mentioned it already about the county grind. Here on the podcast, we've mentioned it quite a few times with regards to New Road. It has been a bit of a bowler's graveyard this season. Very flat. Yeah. It's allowed for a lot of runs to be scored. I think to the Bears versus Pairs match, for example, when there were loads of runs scored, we've seen lots of runs from the likes of Dal Mitchell, Jake Libby, for example, as well. What is it actually like to bowl at New Road in 4-day cricket? Because we've had our speculation, but how do you find it personally?
It's tough. It's hard toil. We played on a couple of pitches that have offered one ball that does a bit every 100 or so. and we played on some really tough pitches. But that's good. That adds... It's all learning experiences to try and work out how you're going to get wickets on those sort of pitches. And it's put a lot of thought into what field you're going to have. Like, what's our tactic here to get this guy out? And it's good like that. But it has been tough. But it's fine. It's all good. I'm looking forward to it again. Hopefully they create some more flat pitches and we can try and get them out.
Fair enough. That is the attitude, Dylan. It really is. I mean, I've said it on the podcast, a wicket at New Road is worth two pretty much anywhere else. It's a really, really difficult surface, and fair play. I mean, I have stuck up for Worcestershire's bowlers here on the weekly wrap-up shows, because you can look at stats and they can be a bit misleading, because it has been such a flat pitch pretty much all season long. It really has. But of course, Dylan, 2021 aside, what are the aspirations for 2022 and beyond? Of course, I'm guessing domestic silverware for Worcestershire will be up there across all three formats, I suppose. And then, of course, international cricket beyond that. But for you, Dylan, as a seam bowler in the next 2, 3, maybe 4 seasons in your professional career, what are you looking to achieve on an individual perspective?
I said at the start of the season, I just want to be a consistent player for Worcester. I obviously want to get in some Lions stuff and get my experience through there and learn more again. But yeah, get myself consistently in the Worcestershire 4-day side will be a main thing. And then when I'm in that, which I think I'm getting closer to, is being more of a consistent player, is being consistently in taking wickets. Averaging a certain amount of wickets a year would be ideal. And just consistently helping Worcestershire to wins will be my main thing.
Fair enough, Dylan. And you know what? Even as a Warwickshire fan, I'm wishing you nothing but the very best of luck, mate. Yeah. I really am. You're a very, very good bowler, as I said. We mentioned you plenty of times here on the podcast. It's been a breakthrough season. We've been incredibly impressed. And of course, I've no doubt that you'll be hitting those heights in both 2021 and of course, the seasons beyond that as well, mate. Wishing you the very, very best of luck, apart from maybe the Bears versus Pairs match.
Well, thank you.
Every other game aside, Dylan, do us proud. That's all I'll say, mate. But moving on then, Dylan, from the main course of today's podcast, we do, of course, have our after-dinner special, which is, of course, TCCB teammates. So for those out there who don't know how this segment works, basically in front of me, I've got 10 or so questions for Dylan that all orientate around his teammates that he shares a dressing room with at New Road. So, Dylan Pennington, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
I am ready.
Fantastic. Right then, first question, Dylan. Who's the teacher's pet at Worcestershire? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Adam Finch. Adam Finch asks a lot of questions.
I'm surprised by that. I would have thought someone like a Jack Haynes.
Jack Haynes, yeah, he asks for a lot of, he hits all the time and he absolutely loves it. So, yeah, they're always asking questions. They're always around the coaches.
Teacher's pets then at Worcestershire in Adam Finch and Jack. Fair enough. Say. Moving on to our next one then, a classic here on TCCP. Who's Mr. Hard as Nails at New Road? Who wouldn't you want to mess with necessarily?
You wouldn't want to mess with... you wouldn't want to mess with Ross Whiteley, I don't think. I think he could probably throw a good punch. He's pretty, he's quite a big unit. Yeah, you wouldn't want to mess with him. Not that he would do that, but yeah.
Just in general, just a generalisation. Yeah, he's pretty well built, shall we say. Ross Whiteley got some guns on display there for the Rapids. Moving on to our next one then, Dylan. Who's the dressing room DJ at Worcestershire and what is their choice of music?
Ben Cox and a bit of everything really. He's quite a good DJ. He's good on the old Spotify. Yeah, bit of everything.
Fair enough.
Nice. Yeah, variety. Nice. Not one. Yeah, variety is key.
Oh, 100%. Variety is the spice of life, isn't it? Again, that old adage. Another cliche I've lobbed into the podcast. But Dylan, if you were the DJ, what would your choice of music be? What would be blaring out in the dressing room?
I'd be awful. I'm not up with the sort of the modern. I love sort of acoustic hits sort of thing. I like acoustic guitars and that sort of music. I'm not quite a rap sort of music yet. Just chilled pop music, I'd say.
Any examples just for the listeners out there?
I'll tell you what song I do like at the moment. New Ed Sheeran song.
Oh, Bad Habits.
Yeah, great song.
Fair enough. Yeah, we're in agreement there. I must admit, yeah, decent song. We're not sponsored by a cheer in here on TCCP, but yeah, decent song. That, fair enough. Very musically themed, the next question as well, I have to admit. Yeah. Who's the karaoke king at Worcestershire? And again, what is their go-to choice of song?
Well, I don't know. I've never had a karaoke, I don't think.
If that's the case, Dylan, if you were to do karaoke, what would your choice of song be?
You're Beautiful, James Blunt.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, there's a theme here, isn't there? With the old guitar in the background.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm not going to sing it because my voice is absolutely dreadful. Dylan, any sample or, or not? No.
Definitely.
Fair enough. We'll stick to cricket here on TCCP. Yeah, it's not the X Factor. Brilliant. Moving on to our next one then, Dylan. This is a pretty new one, I must admit, but it's becoming an instant classic here on the Counts Cricket Podcast. Who would be the most likely to get timed out during a game at Worcestershire?
Don't know. Well, if it wasn't me, I would say Josh Tong.
Is he slow with getting the gear on?
No, he just might forget something, take two left-handed gloves out or something. So he might have to go back up. But then I'm not saying I wouldn't do that. I've done it before, so...
Wait, hang on, we have to know the back. You took two left-hand gloves out.
I actually did in my final under-19s game in New Zealand. I took two left-handed gloves out and had to run back into the changing room. I was fine. I was premeditating Ethan Bamba getting out, so then I was already walking out. So I had to go back in, get my right-handed glove out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you can't go out there with two left-handed ones unless you want to go without a glove.
To be fair, I should have, because it might have done better. I only lasted one ball, I think.
Yeah, but that's not your role, Dylan, is it? You're tail ender.
True.
You're not there to score the runs. You're there to take the wickets.
Yeah, that's, well, I don't know. Yeah.
Or at least that's what I get told when I get bowled out for about two or three down the old village green. Moving swiftly on. Oh, the classic one, the big one here on TCCP, the one where you can throw your teammates or at least one of them under the bus. Who are the best and worst dressed at Worcestershire, Dylan, and why?
Worst is Josh Tong. He wears stupid shoes, stupidly expensive shoes and stupidly expensive tops. So I'm going in worst dressed. and best... I'd say Charlie Morris. He wears very smart clothes. Yeah, just very regular, regs, nice clothes. Tommy Hilfiger, polo, jeans, nice shoes.
Smart casual. Yeah. Decent style. That, fair enough. Yeah, seems like an apt choice then. With Charlie Morris. Moving on to our next one, Dylan, very much cricket orientated. Who's the biggest badger at Worcestershire?
Ed Barnard, definitely. Talks cricket, loves cricket, knows everything about cricket. Apart from actually Ish Sodhi, who we just had, knew the top 100 top scores. So if you asked him the score, say 267, he'd know the batter.
Oh wow.
Pretty incredible party trick.
Fair play. We'll have to try that out. Ish, if you're listening, mate, we'll get you on. We'll have to test that out. That'd be some decent entertainment.
We did it on a coach on the way back.
Yeah. Oh, fair play. Okay, Ish. So I get that. I mean, the guy absolutely lives and breathes cricket, doesn't he?
He does. He said he was going to bowl for about 4 hours before his flight back to New Zealand. So he hates bowling for at least 10 days of his 14-day quarantine, because then he won't regret it too much. He bowls and bowls and bowls.
He is a badger. Ed Barnard is as well. I must admit, Barnard, we had him on the podcast. He knew his cricket. Fair play to Ed. And again, he's had a wonderful season as well. He's going from strength to strength. Oh, this next one, Dylan. Again, a classic here on TCCP. Who's the dressing room joker at Worcestershire? Who's always pulling a prank or a practical
Brett
joke?
Brett D'Oliver. He likes to take the mick. But yeah, he keeps the boys going on these flat pitches when we play him on New Road.
I can imagine. And I actually have a follow-up question to that. This isn't a usual teammates one, but I'm not sure if you can give us the answer here, Dylan. But Brett D'Oliveira's Instagram stories, or should I say, stories full of memes.
He loves them, doesn't he?
Yeah. What do you know why he posts so many memes on his story? I mean, it's not often that we see. Yeah, I can't deny that. they made us laugh the other day, myself and Joe, but it's not often you see professional cricketers sharing a load of memes.
No, it's not, but it is good fun. I quite enjoy them. Yeah, I'm not sure. Wouldn't be able to answer. Sorry.
We'll have to get him on the pod. Fair enough, though. We have found out it is Brett D'Oliveira. Joe thought he was hacked at some point. So
yeah. Well, I don't know if it is.
So he might be. Oh, great. Okay. Again, we'll have to wait and find out then. So that is still remains unanswered. Sorry, Joe. I tried getting the answer, mate. Moving on to our penultimate question then, Dylan. Oh, we're bringing back an old one here on TCCP. Who's the biggest baller? So football, who's the best footballer at Worcestershire?
Oh, Ed Barnard again. Or Daryl Mitchell. Daryl Mitchell, a very good footballer. But Ed Barnard, he's played a lot when he was younger. He's a very good footballer. Got a lot of time on the ball, but a bit too skillful. Got a bit too many tricks under his sleeve. And yeah.
And I suppose on the flip side of that, who's the worst? Who can't kick a football to save their life?
Well, I can't kick one because I'm not allowed, but I can't really slow down at the lads say, so I'm not allowed to because I'm a bit too dangerous. So I'll probably go me. But Josh Dell's no good.
Is that because you tackle him?
Yeah, no, just I don't know. They just don't let me play. It's a touchy subject.
Goodness, man. I thought you're like Roy Keane in the middle, just like hacking people down. And yeah, that's can't say we've heard that on the podcast before, but there we go.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Moving on to our final question then, or should say, you know, our final of a two-part of this one is Dylan, actually. But again, a very popular one here on TCCP. Who would be the most likely to win I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here at Worcestershire?
Ooh. Well, I would say Charlie Morris, because he'd just do anything and he's quite like that. But then he probably is not going to want to go on that sort of show. He's not that. He'd probably survive pretty good. I'll just go him. Even though he'd never want to go on that show in his life, but he probably would win it.
Hey, who knows, one day, ITV, if you're listening, get Charlie Morris's representatives in contact. Who knows? We could see it one day. We've seen all sorts of people on I'm a Celeb, so who knows? Yeah. Anything can happen. Life's strange. It is very, very strange. And this is the final one to wrap up then, Dylan. Again, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, orientated. Who wouldn't last a day on that show? Who would say, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, within a day of entering the jungle?
Josh Dell. I don't think he'd cope with the food, the living conditions. I'm not sure he'd be able to do it.
To be fair, you can't really blame people if they don't want to. Would you do it, Dylan, personally?
I live in a hammock. Yeah, I think it'd be quite funny. Yeah, I would enjoy it.
Oh, there we go then. If Charlie Morris isn't up for it, there we go. ITV, I'm doing your job for you. Dylan Pennington. Yeah. Get him in the jungle 2032 or 2033. There we go. Something for us all to look forward to. But no, Dylan, thank you very much for those answers today. And yeah, that brings us to not only an end to today's teammate segment, but of course to the wider podcast episode as a whole. So Dylan, before I let you go, do you just have any kind of final words, anything to wrap up on, any social media channels to promote, for example?
No, just thank you very much for having me on, and it's been enjoyable. I hope people enjoy listening to me talk rubbish about cricket.
I'm sure they will, Dylan. As I said, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's been a fantastic conversation, and yeah, just wishing you the very best heading into the rest of the season and of course beyond. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. To all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.